from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Academic freedom is upheld at a Catholic university in a blow to political correctness. This week on Register Radio, we talk to Register staff reporter Peter Jesser-Smith for the details. But first, President Trump has a chance to shape the Supreme Court for decades to come, and he has decided Judge Brett Kavanaugh is the man to do it. We find out what lies ahead for the Supreme Court nominee. I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host of Register Radio, and I'm joined, as usual, by Matthew Bunsen, the Register's senior editor and co-host of Register Radio. Matthew, thanks for being with us again.
Always good to be with you.
So this week, it's been an important week in Washington, D.C. President Trump announced that the Federal Circuit Court Judge Brett Kavanaugh is his pick to succeed retiring Justice Anthony Kennedy. Of course, this begins what is expected to be a very bitter confirmation process, and you're there inside the Beltway and probably have a very tangible experience of of the acrimony that is about to ensue or already has.
Well, having been at the Gorsuch hearings in 2017, I'm gearing up for covering the what will now be the Kavanaugh hearings, and I don't think anyone is expecting an easy time.
Absolutely. Well, in studio there in D.C., joining us to talk about this process and the pick is Christine Roussel, who works for a Catholic news agency, a partner of the National Catholic Register, in that we are both a part of the EWTN news family. So, Christine, welcome.
Well, thank you for having me.
So, Christine, I'm sure, as Matthew has, you've been experiencing all of this tension in the air over this pick. There was a lot of protest and I guess, guessing on who would be President Trump's pick. And, of course, the choice has been made for Brett Kavanaugh. Why do you think, or I guess, why has Trump said and others speculated that Kavanaugh was his choice?
I mean, his credentials are all there. He's a very solid judge. He is sufficiently conservative enough, I think, to appease most of Trump's base. And the fact that he does have so much experience makes it hard for Sanders to justify voting against him.
So, of course, another candidate who was a finalist was Amy Coney Barrett. Some have been disappointed that she didn't make it. Can you speculate on why she wasn't one of the finalists?
I'm definitely one of those people who is disappointed that Justice Barrett wasn't nominated on Monday night. But I think her lack of experience as a judge definitely doesn't help her case because she is so new and she was only just approved last year for the court that she's currently on. And I think she needs to basically build up more of a judicial resume before she be considered for the Supreme Court. Although I know it's not a requirement given that Justice Kagan had no experience as a judge before the Supreme Court. But I do think that Kavanaugh's experience definitely put him over the edge, I think.
And do you have the sense, too, that here's somebody who's been a lawyer and a judge in D.C. for almost his entire life, his entire career, that being part of this environment gives him an edge and was one of the reasons that they think they'd have an easier time getting him confirmed?
I think his familiarity definitely does help, like, with his case. And, again, a lot of senators had to vote to confirm him in 2006, so it'd be interesting to see, like, why would you vote for him 12 years ago, and then suddenly he's not appropriate for the Supreme Court later. It's hard for them to walk that back, which I know especially with some of the, I guess, question mark senators, like such as Susan Collins, has to answer to that. And I think she said that she's at least like leaning towards voting for Kavanaugh. So that's one big question that the GOP could solve, which with Barrett, it doesn't have that answer because she's just, again, so new and hasn't really established herself yet.
Well, Barrett had what has now become a kind of legendary tangle with Senator Dianne Feinstein, the very liberal senator from California, which Senator Feinstein made the observation that the dogma lives loudly within you. Do you think that was a factor at all in not picking Barrett? Because I know that there were a lot of conservatives, such as journalists like yourself, too, who were quite entranced at the prospect of a Barrett nomination.
I think that Feinstein was interesting in that whole experience because it kind of showed an ugliness amongst at least the people in the more liberal end of the Senate of, well, you can be Catholic, just not like a practicing good one. Like, it's okay to just call yourself Catholic, but if you actually believe these things, like, we're going to have a problem. And I think that definitely I think that promoted Barrett to the top of the list anyways. Like, I don't think if she had had that exchange, she would have been nearly as in contention as she was for the Kennedy vacancy.
Yeah, and Barrett belonged to People of Praise. I mean, that you were doing some research into that organization.
Mm-hmm.
How easy would it have been, do you think, in a confirmation process to try to demonize her for that? And that opens the door then to the question more about Kavanaugh.
It definitely, I don't want to say it doesn't help her. I mean, I don't want to like a trash all over this group, but it's an interesting topic to explain, and most senators aren't Catholic. Most senators don't understand what the Charismatic Renewal Movement was, and it's a difficult concept for even like your standard Sunday Mass Catholic to understand. So I think it would have been not helpful for her case to have to explain that.
And of course, to give a word of explanation about it, it was an ecumenical community. Of course, she's Catholic, but it's an ecumenical mm-hmm. community that, and I think really what caught people's attention was they agree to a covenant. They sign a covenant that they're going to abide by the Christian teaching, and that they will submit themselves to this community and to their council. And so that just struck people as very strange. But turning to Kavanaugh, I think, what do we know about his faith and his practice of his Catholic faith?
Well, he was very eloquent in his speech on Monday, which I thought it was kind of interesting that he focused mostly on the very strong women in his life, his mother, his wife, his daughters, and he focused also on his faith, which I think was kind of like the consolation, like, nod to all the conservatives who wanted Barrett. Like, look, like, I know I'm not a woman. I know I am not Amy Barrett when it comes to religion, but, like, I am a seemingly faithful Catholic who is respectful of women, who works very hard to promote women. And it just almost seemed like a reassurance of, like, I'll be an okay judge for you.
Do we have any indicator based on some of the things he said? He talks about feeding the poor, and is this part of a plan? Not, I'm calling him unauthentic in any way, mm-hmm. but is this part of trying to build a case for him in the court of public opinion? Look how normal my family is. Look at, I'm a decent person. That all of the things that you have to do now in this kind of an environment for a confirmation.
I mean, I think he was trying to, like, portray himself as, like, an upstanding family man who was, like, an average Joe kind of everyday guy, not this, you know, demon right-wing conservative who wants to enslave women by overturning Roe, which is how he's going to be portrayed as for probably the next few weeks during his confirmation hearings.
Like, it was even before he was announced.
Yeah, he's been basically been demonized for the whole since the whole process, since Kennedy announced he was retiring. And I think that he wants to at least get an idea in people's minds of, like, how can you say these things about me when, like, I do all of these things that are good? Like, I feed the homeless. I am a former altar boy. Those are all good images that people should have. Those are good images that he wants to create in people's minds of himself, that it makes it harder to trash someone than if you think they're good.
You know, Matthew, this question is really for you in the sense that you're a historian, and we've talked about this in our editorial meetings, but the makeup of the court, the religious makeup of the court now, is very, very Catholic, and this is a change historically.
Well, it is. We're now looking at five justices, assuming that Kavanaugh is approved, five justices who are Catholic. We also have Neil Gorsuch.
Who was
raised a Catholic and now goes to an Episcopalian church. That is a little hazy exactly what he is. And then we have three members of the Jewish faith. This is a pretty remarkable sea change from a time when Catholics were a genuine rarity, and any Catholic who was actually proposed for the court knew they would have to face the anger, the rage of the Ku Klux Klan. So it's kind of ironic that we've gone from the Klan opposing Catholics now to really liberal progressives who are opposing Catholics, in some ways for the same reasons, that they're deathly afraid of supposed interference from the dogma of the Catholic faith.
You know, another thing that has struck me is in this whole fight leading up to the announcement, and of course the fight that is about to ensue, is how much this has become a part of the public discussion. We've been talking as we prepare our editorial, this upcoming editorial, about how years past the Supreme Court justices weren't even really known by the general public. So that kind of preserved their ability to make decisions without the public eyeing each and everything that they did. But this has drastically changed in the last several years.
I blame the internet, honestly. We live in a society where I could, send a tweet to literally the president of the United States and potentially get a response. I mean, we are more connected and there's more information available now than there has been ever before. And this has its pluses and its minuses, but I think I agree. I don't think that the Supreme Court justices should necessarily be like the celebrity figures that they are. I mean, if you look at basically cult status of like Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she literally had movies about her and she's become kind of a meme in and of herself of just this whole RBG like persona. I don't think that's necessarily a good thing. And I'd be saying the same thing about a conservative justice, too. I just don't think it's necessarily to put these people on that kind of pedestal.
Absolutely.
I mean, very sort of liberal outlets on the internet following what Sonia Sotomayor is wearing for shoes.
Yeah. Just amazing.
So it's
weird.
The justices have been caught up in the whole celebrity culture.
Yeah. And look at the president. I mean, he's a former reality host.
And this is the moment that we're in. And really, Justice Scalia was a part of this as well. He was a larger-than-life person. Justice Kennedy really became that in some of the decisions he made. He became a figure to applaud. So we're in a very interesting moment. But let's turn in the last minute and a half of the show and talk about what is to come. What are we in for and who should we watch?
I mean, like I said earlier, the two pro-choice Republican senators, Susan Collins of Maine, my home state, and Murkowski of Alaska, those will definitely be – I mean, Susan Collins has been sworn by reporters basically every time she steps out into public. And those will definitely be people to watch. Also, the red state Democrats that are up for re-election November 2, especially, those could be potential people that could flip to support Kavanaugh. But –
so we're thinking Manchin of West Virginia,
Heitkamp
and North Dakota, and Donnelly of Indiana, all of them in really tough
kind of uphill
races. Yeah.
Yeah. And those states pretty much went overwhelmingly to Trump. So it'll be interesting to see how the reaction is in their home states as well if they choose to not support Trump's nominee, who I think is going to be very popular, at least amongst his base.
And how soon will official proceedings begin?
I don't think a date has been announced. Has there been?
Yeah, I think all we know at this point is that Senator McConnell, who's in charge of all of this, is planning as quickly as possible to move the hearings. Senator Grassley, who's in charge of the Senate Judiciary Committee, wants these hearings very quickly. The Democrats want to try to slow things down, especially arguing that because Barrett, Kavanaugh has been involved in some 300 decisions.
Right.
That there's a lot of paperwork. There are probably about 30,000 emails that they're poring over right now.
It's a lot to go through.
They will argue that this is going to take time.
The goal, though, is to get him on the court by the start of the new term, which is October 1st. So I think that's doable, but it'll be tight.
So I mean probably hearings in August or September.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's going to be a very fascinating ride. Of course, we look forward to some of the breakdown of those decisions that he has made. Of course, there are 300 of them. So if the Register will be focusing on what he said about abortion, what he has ruled about religious liberty, about immigration and other issues that have been of interest to our readers. Christine, I am grateful for your time today and for your reporting. It's a very important beat that you're on in D.C., and I'm sure we'll be seeing a lot more of your writing on this nomination process.
Thank you so much for having me on today.
And, of course, our listeners can go and follow Christine. She's both at CatholicNewsAgency.com and at NCRegister.com. The latest story on Judge Kavanaugh is D.C. Judge Brett Kavanaugh nominated to the U.S. Supreme Court. And when we return from our break, we will talk to Peter Jesserer Smith about academic freedom at Marquette University. And this is Register Radio here on EWTN Radio.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I come from the other side of the tracks, see? My uncle used to have slot machines. Put one nickel in and it's emptied. And I brought him home in a bag, and my mother looked at me. Where did you get all that money? I said, I won them. You didn't win them. He fixed the machine. I didn't care if he fixed the machine or not, you know?
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Have you heard who's reading the Register? Why, it's Marcus Groda.
I believe EWTN's National Catholic Register is unique from other newspapers in that it not only is committed to reporting the news from the world and the church and our faith, but it does so through the lens of the faithfulness of our Catholic Church.
For a 3-month free subscription to the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 3 months free banner or call 1-800-421-3230.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register and host of Register Radio, along with Matthew Bunsen, who's joining me from Washington, D.C. And in this segment, we're talking about Marquette University being ordered to reinstate a political science professor, John McAdams, after a drawn-out three-year suspension. This has been a battle, basically, for McAdams that we have followed closely at the Register, and it's quite interesting to see how the court in the court in Wisconsin has ruled on this case. Joining us to talk about this, and someone who has followed it from the beginning, is our Register staff reporter Peter Jesserer Smith. Peter, thanks for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me, Jeanette. It's always a pleasure.
So your latest story on this is called Court Rules Marquette University Violated Conservative Professor's Academic Freedom. And this ruling just happened about a week ago. And let's first of all establish what caused the suspension of Dr. McAdams.
Well, that is a rather long story in which what happened was that back in November 2014, a student came to Professor McAdams with the recording of his graduate student teacher named Cheryl Abate, who was teaching a class. And the student represented to McAdams that he had tried to bring up a point of view about same-sex marriage, something consistent with church teaching, and had been suppressed in his classroom by his teacher from bringing that point forward. Events then took a turn when McAdams had this blog called the Marquette Warrior, which he still does, and he has written about areas where, Marquette professors or students or whatever have strayed outside the bounds of either Catholic teaching or pushed political agendas that he feels are not consistent with Marquette and its mission. Well, McAdams, having received it a certain way, he blogged about it, and his post went viral.
Mm-hmm.
And it's created a huge backlash against the graduate student teacher, Cheryl Abate. And in retrospect, a lot of this whole situation probably could have been avoided. But because McAdams' post went viral, created a huge amount of attention, the situation at the university just exploded. And there were different competing claims. But in any event, we finally got led to this. McAdams was suspended. The student teacher left. They conducted an investigation over a year, and basically they came to a conclusion that McAdams had not acted in accordance with how a tenured professor should act with regard to a student teacher. But the president then made a decision. The faculty hearing committee made a decision that he should be suspended for 1 to 2 semesters without pay. And by this time, he had been effectively off campus since this whole thing exploded. But his reinstatement was made conditional upon him signing a statement saying that he would admit fault and apologize to Shirley Abate, which he refused to do because McAdams felt that he didn't do anything wrong and he was exercising First Amendment rights and academic freedom guaranteed by his contract. So he wouldn't sign a statement that he didn't believe in, and Marquette wouldn't reinstate him without him signing the statement. So it went to court, and it's been a very watched case ever since.
And thus it has been three years of absence, nearly 4 years of his absence from the Jesuit campus over this situation. It seems as though now he's been vindicated. The court ruled in his favor and ordered his reinstatement immediately, including back pay.
Yes,
which is a pretty big ruling. So why did the court rule in this way?
Well, what it seemed to me is that the court came down to that, Marquette couldn't rely upon the process that it had, the faculty hearing committee doing the investigating, and the president basically agreeing to impose a certain discipline and then add on to it. And the courts essentially said that this is not an arbitration-style process that we have to automatically defer to. I mean, the court pointed out that there were certain elements of that are standard in legal arbitration that were just missing. I mean, one of them being that one of the members of the faculty hearing committee had been out and out hostile to Professor McAdams, calling for his head.
Yeah.
And they said, well, wait a minute, if we had a legal arbitration case that was handed to us this way, we would have thrown out, say, this is intrinsically flawed.
Sure.
And I mean, there were many, a lot of this process began, there was a lot of heat and a lot of passion. And
really the
process,
the court said, this process really showed the divisions, the polarization already on the campus at Marquette. Those who were struggling over this, this sense of political correctness versus an academic freedom to actually teach what the church teaches in areas of especially same-sex marriage. And so,
we got to be careful here, too, because McAdams' point was to stand up for a student's right to present the church's teaching. But there were some professors who said, look, I understand that there's a lot of, progressive leftist agenda going on at people at Marquette, but the thing that a tenured professor should do is to try to correct a graduate student personally rather than go after the blog. So there was a middle ground and concern where even professors who are faithful Catholics and conservatives at Marquette said, yeah, I don't think he should have been suspended, but I did have a problem with what he did.
Sure.
McAdams, though, has a kind of a history of this, doesn't he? I mean, here you mentioned in your article that he's an evangelical Protestant who's described himself as a professor whose conservative views are running right into the political correctness on Marquette's campus, and he's actually used his blog to call out the university to uphold its Catholic identity, which is something of an irony that an evangelical would be doing this. So this is sort of fitting with his personality, isn't it?
It definitely does. And I think one of the things that he said he wanted to pursue this case to the very end is because he knows professors in other situations that end up, that are problems for their universities, and he feels end up being bullied, but just, take a check, cut their losses and run. And so, and that's why McAdams has people from the, the liberal progressive end spectrum of things that were saying, I want this guy to succeed. He shouldn't be treated this way by his university. And so there was more of a broader political consensus, than just a left versus right thing.
Sure, sure. Peter, I want to turn to something else you're working on, but I would say I agree with you there that there was a lot of support for his academic freedom, and really the court did rule that this was a breach of his contract, that his contract guaranteed that freedom, that academic freedom. So this is a real win for true academic freedom. But turning to something else that you are working on this week, you had an interview with the Nigerian Cardinal Francis Arenze, who was the former prefect of the Office of Divine Worship at the Vatican. So what did you talk about?
Well, Cardinal Arenze has written a new book called The Evangelizing Parish. And what he really wants to focus on and get in the hands of people who are from priests down to the layman in the pew is the role of the parish in an evangelization. And I think the book is very appropriate for our own times, especially when we're in a very mobile society in which a lot of Catholics don't act like members of a parish or that they belong to it. A lot of them follow a priest that they like, or they go to what mass is convenient. And the book really gets to how a parish should really operate as a family. And we covered a number of topics, but one of them, some of them are very striking. One of which is diocesan priests should really start to live in community together instead of like strangers under a rectory roof if they do live in the same place or isolated. He pointed out it's not really good for their overall well-being. Celibacy is something that should be lived in community, and it's something we don't talk about a lot in the Latin West, unfortunately. But he pointed out it can actually enrich cross-collaboration between priests who are dealing with different situations and can share ideas. If you bring them together in a common prayer life, in a communal life, you have more idea sharing that can go on.
Yeah.
And for the parish to really experience the liturgy, both Mass and Liturgy of the Hours, as the lifeblood of their evangelization going forward. So
there's
we covered a lot of different topics. Yeah. I think people will be interested.
A lot to look forward to in that upcoming interview published at ncregister.com. So thanks for the teaser, Peter.
Hey, you're welcome, Jeanette.
Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, and this podcast, check out National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us on Register Radio here on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Michael Birchfield, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.